Imagine you spend months, like just literally locked away, painstakingly painting this
Oh,
masterpiece.
yeah, just pouring everything into it.
Right. You pour an entire decade of your spiritual and romantic history into this one single canvas. You meticulously layer all these acrylics. You integrate sacred
You
text.
build this, yeah, this profound testament to love.
Exactly. And then when it finally comes time to release your official artist statement to the world, instead of talking about your own genius, you point out exactly where you messed up the shadows.
It's wild. It completely shatters that whole illusion we expect from the art world.
It really does.
Because we are so conditioned, like, we're conditioned to seeing artists present their work as this inevitable, flawless culmination of a grand vision.
Like it just sprung from their head, perfectly formed.
Right. So to see one voluntarily pull back the curtain and say, you know, I really should have handled the depth on that cheekbone better, it's just incredibly jarring.
Well, that is exactly the tension we are exploring today. Welcome to this deep dive.
Glad to be here.
We are looking at a highly reflective, honestly, just deeply analytical artist's statement by the painter Jairo Duque. It details his piece titled Varangi Ikanai.
And it's a fascinating piece of writing.
It is. So our mission today is to figure out how a visual artist takes this fleeting 10-year-old memory and, translates it into a physical monument of human devotion.
Yeah, we're going to explore how time literally gets layered onto a canvas.
The philosophy of color, and of course, that rare vulnerability of a creator deconstructing his own finished work.
Which is the best part. But I mean, to really grasp the weight of this painting, we kind of have to rewind.
Right. We have to separate the moment the image was captured from the moment the artwork was actually created.
Exactly. Because the foundation of this painting, it isn't just a sketch, it's a photograph that Duke himself took over a decade ago.
Yeah, the subjects are Varangi and Kanai, and the photo captures the absolute very beginning of their relationship.
Just right at the start.
Yeah, Duke's notes describe this specific era as being marked by novelty, by a kind of romantic illusion, and just that raw, crackling energy of discovery.
The honeymoon phase.
Literally the honeymoon phase. You look at them and you see it immediately.
Right, but the thing is, the camera only captures a fraction of a second. It just grabs that initial spark and freezes it.
Yeah.
But the magic of this artwork is what happened the 10 years between, the shutter clicking and Duke actually picking up a brush.
Right, because Varangi and Kanai didn't just stay together.
No, their relationship evolved radically.
Yeah.
Today, Duke describes them not just as a couple, but as devotional siblings within the Hare Krishna movement.
See, that phrase, devotional siblings, that fundamentally changes the lens through which we are looking at this
Oh,
couple.
completely.
It shifts the dynamic from a purely romantic, kind of ego-driven connection.
Right, two young people just obsessed with each other.
Exactly, to a shared service towards something much higher. But I mean, I am stuck on the logistics of this.
Okay, what do you mean?
Well, capturing a 10-year evolution sounds great in theory, but how does the passage of a decade actually change the function of a portrait? Like, if it's a picture of them 10 years ago, isn't it still just a picture of two young people?
That's a great question. The consequence of that 10-year gap is that the original image basically becomes validated by the present.
Validated by the present.
Yeah, think about it this way. If Duke had painted this canvas the very morning after he took the photograph, it would simply be, a hopeful record of a new romance.
Right, it would be entirely about potential.
Exactly. We wouldn't know if they were going to break up next week.
True.
But painting it more than a decade later, from the vantage point of knowing that they actually built a lasting spiritual bond,
Oh, I see
the
then.
image of their younger selves suddenly gains this immense gravity. Duke isn't looking back with just mere nostalgia.
He's looking back with reverence.
Yes, reverence, knowing the profound destination that this early, what he calls illusion, eventually led to.
Wow. And this kind of brings us to the physical space where that realization happens, doesn't it?
Oh, you mean the studio?
Yeah, Duke works out of his studio in Whittier, California. And that studio, it's basically the laboratory where this translation takes place.
Right. Whittier is where all this
Because
happens.
you have the split second speed of a photograph, and then you have the slow, deliberate, meditative environment of the Whittier studio.
Yeah, where the artist just sits with that frozen moment.
Exactly. Sits with it and spends weeks or even months pulling it into the present day.
The environment of the studio is crucial because it's the grounding reality for the work. I mean, Whittier becomes the site of this sort of temporal alchemy.
Temporal alchemy, I like that.
Yeah, he's taking a ghost of the past, bringing it into his physical workspace in California, and meticulously layering a decade of lived experience right on top of it.
Which naturally begs the logistical question.
How do you do it?
Yeah. How do you actually put time on a canvas without it just looking like two completely disjointed ideas?
Well, he doesn't just look at the photo and start painting a replica.
Right.
He uses this highly specific hybrid technique.
Yeah, he begins with a direct image transfer onto the canvas.
And for those unfamiliar, this isn't like projecting an image on a wall and tracing it.
No, no.
It involves actually applying a medium to a printed photograph, placing it face down on the canvas, and then physically rubbing away the paper.
So that the actual ink or the toner is left totally embedded in the fabric of the canvas itself.
Exactly. He lifts the literal physical image from the past and just forces it into the foundation of the painting.
And Duke notes that this ensures absolute fidelity to the original proportions and the framing, right?
Right. He refuses to rely on the fallibility of human memory or even his own sketching hand for that base structure.
It acts like a fossil.
Oh, a fossil. Yeah.
The photographic transfer is this undeniable bone structure. It's the objective proof that this specific embrace in this specific geometry existed in reality.
But a fossil is just cold history. To bring it to life, to bridge that gap between the past moment and his Whittier studio today, Duke then paints over the transfer with acrylics.
And I have to admit, I look at that process with a bit of skepticism.
Really? Why?
Well, if the original photograph already captures their energy so perfectly, doesn't slapping acrylic paint all over the top of it risk ruining the raw authenticity of that memory?
I see what you mean.
Like, why not just frame the beautiful photo? Or, you know, if you want to paint, just start with a blank canvas.
See, but the risk is entirely the point.
How so?
If he just framed the photo, he is only giving you the objective, cold truth of what a machine saw a decade ago.
Okay, sure.
It leaves out the 10 whole years of spiritual growth. But if he paints from a blank canvas, he loses the hard, undeniable anchor to that split-second reality.
Oh, so by fusing them together.
Exactly. By fusing them, the canvas becomes a physical manifestation of human memory.
Because memory is never just the objective facts.
Exactly the opposite. We constantly paint over our own memories.
Yeah, we do.
When you recall a moment from your past, you aren't playing back a raw video file.
Right, it's not a hard drive.
No, you are coloring that memory with every emotion, every betrayal, every joy you've experienced since it happened.
Wow, yeah. Your present state dictates how you view your past.
Duke is just doing this psychological process with physical acrylics. The toner is the objective past, and the acrylic paint is the subjective emotional present.
He is physically layering time.
Yes.
So let's look at the actual colors he's using to layer that present emotion over the past. Because what you see when you stand in front of this artwork is incredibly vibrant and deliberate.
Oh, absolutely. The visual cues are all engineered to communicate that transition.
From a secular romance to a profound spiritual union.
Right. And the composition itself centers entirely on the closeness of their bodies. Their embrace symbolizes union, complicity, trust.
And Duke specifically calls out their smiles as the, what do you say, the expressive axis of the piece?
Yeah, the expressive axis.
It's not a stoic, formal, religious portrait.
Not at all.
It radiates spontaneity and genuine delight, but he doesn't leave it in the realm of everyday human joy.
No, he elevates it through the palette. The painting is absolutely dominated by yellows, ochres, and these warm tones.
And those choices are steeped in visual history, aren't they?
Oh, very much so. Duke explains that these warm tones create an atmosphere of joy, devotion, and spiritual light.
Yeah.
He uses this golden hue in the background that basically functions as a symbolic halo.
Which feels to me like a direct nod to Byzantine art, right?
Definitely.
Or early religious iconography, where saints are painted against these solid gold backgrounds to signify they exist in this divine, untouchable space.
Exactly. And by taking this candid earthly photo of a young couple and surrounding them in that Byzantine gold, Duke is visually validating their journey.
He's explicitly stating that their love story isn't just a sweet human narrative anymore.
Right. It has reached a spiritual, sacred plane through their shared faith in their Krishna movement.
But, and this is important, he doesn't let them float away into the golden heavens completely.
No, he grounds them.
He specifically mentions the edges, the sides of the painting, which feature green.
Yeah, and those greens evoke nature and life.
I feel like that tension between the gold and the green is just vital.
It is. The gold represents the untouchable divine, the spiritual devotion, but the green tethers them back to the mortal, messy reality of the Earth.
Yeah, it provides a fresh counterpoint to all that warmth, reminding you that Varangi and Kanai are still living, breathing people who are continually growing.
Right, they aren't just symbols.
No, but there is one more major element layered onto this canvas, and I have to say it's the one that I find the most confrontational as a viewer.
The mantra.
The mantra. He includes a written mantra directly on the artwork.
Yeah, he does.
Now, I often feel that adding literal text to a painting is kind of like, it's like putting subtitles on a beautiful movie scene.
I can see that. It can feel heavy-handed.
Right. It forces the viewer to stop experiencing the art visually and starts forcing them to read intellectually. So how does Duke justify stamping words right into this intimate portrait?
Well, this brings us back to the core of their evolved identity. Duke is adamant that the mantra is not there for texture or decoration.
It's not just a design element.
Not at all. Within the Hare Krishna tradition, the chanting of the Maha Mantra isn't just a side activity. It is the central practice of their spiritual lives.
Okay, so the mantra is the vehicle for their devotion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So to omit it would be to omit the very thing that binds them together today.
I see.
Duke describes the text as a bridge.
Sure, bridge.
Yeah. If the painting just showed a couple in a golden light, it could easily be interpreted as a generic romantic glorification.
Right, just a really pretty picture of two people in love.
Exactly. But the literal text of the mantra demands that the viewer acknowledges the specific spiritual dimension of their bond.
It forces the secular romantic image to connect with their collective religious memory.
Yes. The faith isn't just implied, it is made manifest, literally spelled out. Right on the canvas.
It bridges the young lovers in the photo to the devotional siblings they are today.
Beautifully said.
So we have the fossilized image transfer, the emotional acrylics, the divine golden halo, the earthly green borders, and the sacred text binding it all together.
It's incredibly intricate.
It sounds like a triumph, honestly, which makes the final section of his artist statement so wildly unexpected.
This is my favorite part. This is where Duke strips away the mythology of the artist entirely.
Yeah. Having built this deeply layered, profoundly meaningful document, he suddenly just pivots to self-critique.
Right. In the official statement.
He literally starts listing what he did wrong. It's fascinating.
It really is.
And it's not like false modesty either. It's highly technical, perceptive criticism from a craftsman evaluating his own execution.
Let's actually break down exactly what he found lacking, because his critiques reveal just how demanding this hybrid medium actually is.
Okay, so his first critique is about anatomy and depth.
Right.
He says the drawing keeps a solid structure in the faces and postures, but he admits he could have refined the anatomical definition and the transition between planes to reinforce depth and volume.
Right, so when an artist talks about the transition between planes, they're talking about the physics of light on a three-dimensional object.
Okay, break that down for me.
So a human face isn't a flat circle, right?
No.
It's this complex geometry of angles. Think about the way the forehead curves into the temple, or the way the cheekbone drops into the hollow of the cheek.
Right.
To make a two-dimensional canvas look 3D, an artist has to paint those transitions with incredibly subtle shifts in color and shadow.
And Duke is looking at his own brushwork and saying,
he's saying, I didn't quite capture the curvature.
Wow.
He thinks the faces are structurally sound, but they lack that final illusion of just popping off the canvas.
And his second critique targets the very thing we were just debating, the text.
Oh, right.
He says the typography of the mantra could have been integrated more organically into the overall composition for a more fluid dialogue with the pictorial image.
He recognizes the exact tension you brought up.
Yeah.
He understands that text can be this aggressive interruption to the eye. He wanted it to be a bridge, but he's basically admitting that visually, the planks on that bridge are a little rough.
Like they don't quite blend.
Yeah. The words might be sitting too heavily on the surface rather than feeling really woven into the fabric of the scene.
Which is so honest. And his final critique explores the difficulty of his own technique.
The transfer.
Yeah. He says he could have explored more nuances in the shadows to enrich the tridimensionality of the acrylic over the photographic transfer.
See, painting over printer toner is notoriously difficult.
Really? I wouldn't have known that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The ink creates a very flat, stark, black and white map.
Okay.
So when you apply acrylic over it, trying to coax rich, nuanced shadows out of a base that is inherently flat and mechanical, it requires a very delicate touch.
Right.
He's acknowledging that the dialogue between the objective photograph and the subjective paint didn't blend as seamlessly in the shadows as he envisioned, you know, while he was working in his Whittier studio.
It's just it's a laundry list of technical shortcomings.
It really is.
I mean, the planes are a bit flat, the text doesn't flow perfectly, the shadows lack nuance.
Yeah.
It's like a Michelin star chef coming out to your table and pointing out that the sauce is a tiny bit under-seasoned, even though you think it's the best meal of your life.
That's a great analogy.
If I were an art buyer reading this, I might second-guess the piece entirely. Why on earth would an artist expose this?
Because Duke is teaching us how to actually look at art.
How so?
Well, the art world often equates technical perfection with value.
Right.
But Duke openly states that despite all these flaws, he highly values the piece. And he values it because of its intention, its affection, and its meaning.
So the emotional resonance survives the technical failure.
It doesn't just survive it. It supersedes it completely.
Wow.
The painting captures the seed of a relationship that actually bloomed. It honors a 10-year journey of shared devotion.
Yeah.
The fact that he didn't perfectly execute the shadow on Kanai's jawline doesn't negate the immense spiritual weight of the document.
No, it doesn't.
This self-critique basically proves that art is a living, breathing practice, and it's inherently prone to human error.
Which is incredibly fitting, isn't it?
Totally.
A painting that celebrates human growth and evolution over decades shouldn't be technically flawless.
Right.
The imperfections in the acrylic mirror, the beautiful, messy imperfections of a real relationship. I mean, no couple makes it 10 years without a few rough transitions between planes.
Exactly. Duke states that for him, the painting celebrates a traveled path, a shared faith, and the strength of a love sustained over time.
The technical execution is just secondary to the truth it communicates.
Precisely.
So to pull all these threads together, we've traced an incredible journey today.
We really have.
We started with a fleeting 10-year-old snapshot of a new romance. We followed that image into Yarrow Duke's studio in Whittier, California, where it underwent this intense physical transformation.
Right.
The past was literally transferred onto the canvas, only to be painted over by the subjective emotions of the present.
Yeah, we saw earthly love elevated by Byzantine gold and sacred mantras, reflecting their evolution into devotional siblings.
And ultimately, we learned a powerful lesson in vulnerability. We saw an artist refuse to hide behind the myth of perfection, proving that the true value of our creations lies in the sincerity of their intention.
Which is such a refreshing takeaway.
It really is. It forces you to reevaluate how you interact with your own history.
Oh, absolutely.
Because we are all carrying around these internal transfers, you know, these foundational memories of who we used to be.
Yeah.
And every day, with every new experience and shift in belief, we're basically painting over those memories, altering their meaning.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
Well, before we let you go today, I want you to think about a specific snapshot you took 10 years ago of someone you deeply love.
Just picture it.
Yeah, picture that frozen, objective moment in time. Now, imagine taking that photo into a studio today. If you had to paint over that exact image to represent absolutely everything your relationship has weathered and become since that second, how would you change it?
What colors would you use to show the difficult years?
Exactly. What symbols would you add to honor the growth? And what words would you need to write across it all to finally tell the whole beautifully imperfect truth of your shared history?
It's a lot to think about.
It really is. Keep painting those layers. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. See you next time.